Stretch run of Grant and Danny on the Fan, brought to you by our friends, the law firm Condori and Murad. Nats baseball comes your way in just a few. Pregame at 6:15, first pitch with Charlie and Dave right here on the Fan at 6:45. Let's head out to the Rude Guest Hotline, though, as promised. Gary Myers, acclaimed NFL author, wrote Brady vs. Belichick, which is available now for pre-order wherever you get books. Gary, tell us about this project.
Yeah, I think it's one of the great unanswered questions in sports history. When you have the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback, and then trying to decide, as we only do in sports, because that's what we like to do, you know, who deserved more credit? Who was more influential? Who needed the other more than, you know, who needed one more than the other? And so, you know, I thought of this idea a couple of years ago, and, you know, I did a lot of research on it, and it was a lot of fun writing, and I talked to a million people, and I think the consensus is what you would expect, that more people thought that it was Brady than Belichick, but certainly not by the wide margin that seemed to be in vogue after Tom went to Tampa and won a Super Bowl in his first year, and Bill struggled in New England, made it to the playoffs just once and got fired after 4 years. Everybody goes, well, that, you know, that proves that it was Brady in New England, because look what happened, they were apart. And I shoot down that part of the arguments by simply saying it's irrelevant what they did apart. The question is, who is more responsible for what they did together? Because when they're not together, the circumstances are totally different. Like, it was different for Bill in Cleveland and then in New England after Tom left. And it was different for Tom in Tampa. He went to a pretty good team in Tampa that just needed a really good quarterback to win. So I think the evaluation is really, you know, what they did together.
So I wanted to ask you about that in the sense that when you started this, did you have kind of, we'd all like to be neutral scientists and have, you know, completely unbiased, you know, like you're in a lab trying to figure out the result here. But of course, you probably brought in some preconceived notions. How much of that was challenged? How much changed as you were doing your research? And did your mind change at all?
Well, you know, although, you know, I worked for the Daily News here in New York for all those years, you know, and up until the very end, you know, I was covering the Patriots a lot. You know, they were always in the playoffs, and people in New York hated the Patriots so much that I felt compelled to write about them a lot. So I felt like I lived through that 20-year dynasty. Not like I would have if I was actually working in the Boston media, but I was there enough that, you know, it felt like my, you know, other than the Jets and Giants, I wrote about the Patriots more than any other team. And, you know, I certainly thought it was Tom based on everything that happened in 20 years. But it's not so much that my opinion changed. I think in talking to some people who had it really lopsided in favor of Brady, that I think when I expressed my opinion to them, they said, you know, I never really thought of it that way. You know, that kind of early on. I mean, how could he not have been? He's the one who drafted him in the sixth round. He might not have even gotten drafted. He kept him as a four-string quarterback. If it wasn't for Belichick, we may never have heard of Tom Brady in the NFL, because I'm not convinced he could have gone anywhere and look great in training camp and become Tom Brady. It took a special set of circumstances for that to happen. So I think we tend to overlook how important Belichick was to those first three Super Bowls that happened in Brady's, you know, first 4 years as a starter. Now, I think starting in 2007, which was the undefeated season, and Brady threw 50 touchdowns, I think it was overwhelmingly Brady from that point forward. But that doesn't wipe out what it was like, you know, the first 6 years that Tom started. I think it was a Belichick-dominated team.
Going back to their relationship, though, how much are we going to learn about when it was good and then when it went sideways and why that happened? Do you dig into that?
Oh, sure. I mean, I think that it was good through, you know, most of the first half of the dynasty, where, you know, Tom's a really humble guy. And when Belichick was coaching him really hard, even though he already won three Super Bowls, he was fine with that. And he understood that Belichick was making an example of him, that, hey, if I can get on this guy who's won three Super Bowls, then, you know, I can get on anybody and nobody will complain. And Tom was basically taking one for the team by letting, you know, Belichick criticize an interception the day after a game that the Patriots won 34-7, you know, and Belichick tended to harp on the negative, but Tom understood all that and was okay with it. But I'd say somewhere in the second half of the dynasty, maybe it was after they beat Seattle to break that 10-year drought of not winning the Super Bowl. It was maybe after that that Tom just said, you know, enough is enough. At that point, a lot of people looked at him as the greatest quarterback in NFL history, and he didn't feel he should be treated like a free agent, undrafted free agent anymore. And Belichick just never really let up on him, didn't really appreciate him the way Tom would have wanted to be appreciated. And the fact that, you know, he took undermarket contracts for the entirety of his career, for Belichick to have the money to try to keep the supporting cast strong around him, I think Tom kind of lost his patience with that, because if you looked at Belichick's drafts and his free agent signings over the last 7-8 years, he seemed to have lost his touch.
Once a Giant, Brady versus Manning, now Brady and Belichick, Coaching Confidential, and you can find the book Brady versus Belichick, pre-order and get these books now wherever you get your reading material. Gary, I don't know if this is a touchy subject or what we're allowed to ask, but I'd be remiss if we had you on in D.C. I remember you were writing, I don't know how far into it you got, but you had started writing
82,000 words.
How many?
82,000.
Okay, so you are aware of where I'm going with this.
That's not a weekly college essay to turn in right there. That's pretty substantial.
That's a lot of words. So you were writing a book. I think we even had a name based on what Robert Griffin had posted on social at some point. It was called
Surviving Washington. Yeah.
So how close to finishing that book were you? Why did it never come out? What happened there?
Well, I was done with it. And I had spent a year talking to Robert and writing the book. And the best I can do with you on this one is tell you the fact that it didn't get published was not my idea. And it wasn't the publisher's idea. And Robert just decided that whether he felt there was stuff in the book that would hurt him in his career with ESPN and his media career, because it was right around the time that his one season in Baltimore, I think it was one season in Baltimore, or his last season in Baltimore, let's call it that, was winding down, and he was looking ahead and figuring that his playing career, although he wanted to continue playing, figuring he was going to make the transition to media. I think he got the idea, or somebody told him it wasn't a good idea to write a book. Trust me when I tell you this, that there's nothing in the book that was going to get him in a position where a network was going to say to him, we don't want to hire you, or if he became an announcer for NFL games for any of the networks, that anybody was going to say, you can't come into you can't do the production meetings because of what you wrote in the book. I was really proud of the book. It was the first time I had written, you know, an autobiography. All my books have just been me. And I was really proud of it. And I thought it was really good. And there was some really good stuff in there, really a lot of interesting things about his life, about the Washington years, obviously, and his relationship with the Shanahans and with Sean McVay and Kirk Cousins. I thought it was a really good book, and I'm disappointed it didn't get published. But again, that was out of my control.
I would have killed to read that book. I covered, you know, those 4 years with Mike Shanahan on the Daily Beat, so that would have been very, very interesting content, not just for me, but for the entire
market. Yeah.
I mean, how uncommon is that? Like, when he comes to you, I'm sure you try to talk to him and say, "Let's do this." You worked for a year on that. Like, I don't even know how that works. I guess you're paid for the year that you did, and it's not like a giant waste of time? Like, how does that even go in the end, and how uncommon is that?
Well, it was during COVID, so the first meeting I had with Robert, I went down to his house that he was renting, you know, somewhere near the Ravens facility, because that was, you know, when he was playing in Baltimore. I don't necessarily want to get into all the particulars of let's just say that if all I was interested with this book was the money, then then I got taken care of, even though it didn't get published.
Right.
But I was interested in writing a really good book and selling a lot of books. And I thought it would have been good for Robert, really, because I thought he was very forthcoming and about what was a really interesting career and quite frankly, a heartbreaking career. When you think that he was how he was perceived in Washington in his rookie year. And I mean, he was Jaden Daniels with a knee injury. And it's unfortunate. You know, he got hurt late in the year against the Ravens, and he probably shouldn't have even been playing against Seattle when he tore his ACL in the playoff game. I was at that game. And I remember, in researching the book, I went back and read the column that I wrote after that game. And I wrote it was coaching malpractice by Shanahan, that even before the ACL injury, it was clear to me that Robert couldn't walk or protect himself. He was able to walk. He wasn't able to run like he did throughout most of his rookie year, and I didn't think he'd be able to protect himself well enough. And he didn't need Dr. Andrews, who was on the sidelines for that game, to tell him what to do. And Andrews didn't tell him to take him out of the game, and Mike didn't take him out of the game. But Mike should have just looked at him and thought, there's no way that Kirk Cousins couldn't be better than Robert in this game because Robert couldn't move. And, as you guys know, that being stuck in the pocket was not his game. That's not what made him special. And I think that game cost him his career because he was never the same after that. And he rushed back to play in the first game the next year and shouldn't have. So I feel bad for him. I do, because I think he could have had a brilliant career if things had gone differently, physically for him. And you can say that about a lot of players, but not as many as profile as Robert was. And I mean, it's the second most important and the second hardest job in Washington is being the quarterback of that team. And he did an amazing job his rookie year, and it's just a shame that, we never saw that from him again.
Gary, really appreciate the time with us. Congrats again. New book, September 16th, 2025. It's the Brady versus Belichick, the Dynasty Debate, wherever you get your books, available now for pre-sale. Really appreciate the time, man. Thank you. Congrats.
Thanks for having me on.
Gary Myers, author. Well, that was interesting on Robert Griffin.
It was indeed, right? Some people are over it and they don't want to hear about it. I'm not one of those people. I want to hear everything. I want every last detail I can get, even if it's from one side of the picture. I am so fascinated still with that time and place because of how it consumed our lives.
Well, I mean, I was putting in 70 hours a week on the beat and just desperate for every morsel of information. So, yeah, there wouldn't be any content published about that I wouldn't fight someone to read.
Seriously.
What I mean? It's catnip for me. I mean, I just can't get enough.
Let's get a GoFundMe going to throw a little cash RG3's right way. Maybe he'll let us release it.
By the way, congrats to him as he kind of reshapes his broadcasting career. Fox
Sports
has hired him to do games. And I thought in that role in the booth, he did some really good things. So good for Robert Griffin. It is time for the leadoff, brought to you by the Window Man. Since 1989, the Window Man's been the educational window company. Get your free and home estimate, or visit thewindowman.com's all-new Fairfax showroom.
Behind left-handed pitcher Mitchell Parker, leading off playing left field, James Wood. Batting second, C.J. Abrams, your shortstop. Batting third, first base, Josh Bell. Batting fourth at second base, Luis Garcia Jr. Hitting fifth, doing the catching, that's Riley Adams. Batting sixth, DH for this evening, Dalen Lyle. Batting seventh at third base, Paul DeJong. Batting eighth in right field, Dylan Cruz. And hitting ninth, Robert Hassel III. That was Cruz eighth in right field. Robert Hassel ninth in center field. I got that straight for you.
Dalen Lyle finally back in the lineup. Speaking of back, we are back on Tuesday, off for the holiday on Monday. Big thanks to Darris, Toby, and Ryan, Grant, and Danny saying so long. Thanks for listening to The Fan. Nats Baseball is next.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.